Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833. The world is full of sounds that warn you of danger. Like, if you get a little too close to a rattlesnake, you're the chick-chick-chick. But in the digital world, if your personal information is in danger, there is no chick-chick-chick to let you know that you might be in trouble. The good thing is that LifeLock has added the power of Norton Security to see more cyber threats. Whether it's potential threats to your identity, like your personal information for sale on the dark web, or threats to your devices, like malware or emerging viruses, if you have a problem, their agents will work to fix it. Of course, no one can stop every cyber threat or prevent all identity theft or monitor transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton can detect a wide range of threats that could sneak up on you. Join now and get 10% off your first year. Just go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and enter the promo code BONES. 1-800-LIFELOCK, enter the promo code BONES for 10% off at LifeLock.com. I love LifeLock. I have used LifeLock. They've helped me so many times. LifeLock.com. All right, welcome to episode 156 with Laura. So you're... Belle, sorry. I was ready to start talking, but I didn't even say your name. We have so many friends that...
I know.
One, Ryan Hurd is a friend. I would say I have a lot of artist buds, but Ryan Hurd's a better than a bud to me. And so he was like, yeah, you know, she went on. I was like, I guess not. So I'm glad that you're finally here.
Me too. Yeah. I'm so excited. And Ryan is that to me too. We date back pretty far. We were both like in other marriages when we met, both like little ragtag idiots and no idea what we were doing. And I bonded with him. And I was like, you are a misfit toy. I'm obsessed with you.
Right. And I think that's why I like him too.
Oh, me too.
Because I'm a total misfit here, everywhere.
He just does him. He's not interested. And I love it.
We're talking about Ryan Hurd. Hey, let's run through a couple Ryan songs that you wrote with Ryan real quick.
Yeah.
His current single, To a T.
Yeah. I got you down to a T. Shirt, white sheets,
red wine. Baby, you don't want to leave. And then Diamonds or Twine. Doesn't matter if it's diamonds or twine. Now, he's told this story before about the right, but it's always interesting to me to hear the other,
yeah,
and not even other side, but the other angle of like a song.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about this one for a second, Diamonds or Twine, which he wrote, you know, about Marin.
Mm-hmm. About 20 minutes ago, I heard it in a Walgreens and I texted him.
Really?
Yes, totally. I was like, buddy, I told everyone in line I wrote this song.
That's funny.
I didn't, but I want to make him giggle. That day was amazing. Every time I write with Ryan, I love him and I love writing with him. But he brought in that title. And, you know, I know him and I know his love for Marin. Who doesn't? But, you know, I you can feel energy and he's talking about diamonds and I'm like, all that stuff. And he just wanted to, write a monster love song, and I'm always game for that. That's like my favorite type of song.
Yeah, I wonder, because the environment for, you know, making money with music is different from the passion for making music. Mm-hmm. And I even find that within myself. Like, some things that I know are going to test well and I talk about, or that are going to get ratings, I don't really want to. And you got to balance.
Yes.
Or you have to find a way to make the things that are wanted in a way that you want to make them.
And yes.
So you mentioned love songs. Like, do you ever get in a room and go, you know what, this song probably isn't going to be one that is streamed 10 million times or radio plays, but I just feel like writing it.
That happens to me here and there, but to be honest with you, I'm really obsessed with commercial songwriting and commercial music, so I'm not gathering a lot of like my influences from anything other than commercial music. So I'm hoping for the people I'm writing with and for the artists I'm writing for that there is a component of it's possible to be on the it can be on the radio, even if it's a little, you know, a little different or something. I'm hoping that because all I listen to is the radio and, you know, music that's available, not just on, you know, terrestrial radio, but music, things that people are consuming right now. I hope that the component that I'm bringing is like commercialism or something like that.
It's interesting that you would say that, because I would look at you and go, has no interest in being commercial. You got the sleeve tattoos. You look kind of counterculture.
Yes, on one side.
Yeah.
I really am uninterested in the status quo of living and walking and breathing. But in terms of my taste in music, I don't know what it is. But if you heard the list of my like childhood favorite songs, you'd be like, LOL. Like, it's songs that got me, that still make me cry, are like Michael Bolton songs. And like Said I Loved You But I Lied. I actually showed that to Ryan at some point back in the day, and I was just like, he had heard it, but I was like, you haven't digested this enough. Like, this song is magic. Like, Mutt Lange, my heart is Mutt Lange's. Like, I love music that everyone has agreed upon, and not after the fact, but kind of like you can see it coming, you know? Like the common denominator music is my favorite. Like, this is accessible to everybody. I love language. I'm a linguist. I love words. And the idea that you can say something complicated and emotionally complicated very simply turns me on. I don't know.
You know, a song that I think is very available to everyone, and everyone kind of would assume their narrative, is Speechless, which you wrote with Dan and Shay. Mm-hmm. And the monster song. I mean, so it's got to be so cool to have a song not only be big, but be next level.
Oh, it's so exciting.
And it builds like a snowball.
Mm-hmm.
Here it comes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to do it? Okay, it's doing it. Oh, it's going more. And now it's taking down the city. Yeah. Like, it didn't just roll. Like, it's gotten so big, it's knocking over houses.
Yeah. I told my publisher, and I tell a lot of people, that Speechless is my first job security song where I can tell that even if I never write anything good from this day forth, like, some bitch is going to call me and 30 years and be like, my daughter's having a wedding. I can't afford Dan and Shay. Will you come play? You know, and though she'll pay me 10 grand to come play it. Like, I can see that song, I knew it. Like, I was like, this song is how I'm going to keep my lights on. Like, this kind of song. And, you know, at the end of your career, you've written hopefully like 10, 20, 30, whatever. But there's going to be 3 or 4 that people mention at the end of your life. And I have a feeling Speechless will probably be one of those.
Yeah, I do too. And so when they put the record out, because I'm really close with Dan.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And I'm pretty close with Shay.
Yeah. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Same balance.
And so like, Dan was over at the house and we were talking about the record. And I was like, it was before Speechless was a single, right? Mm-hmm. Tequila was killing it.
It still is.
It still is, right?
Oh, my God.
Both of those songs, like, you almost can't decide which one to play because they're both so big and so good, right?
They are.
And so I was like, Dan, I love Speechless. You should come play it on the show. The record was just coming out, and it wasn't the single, but I was like, you have to play Speechless.
Yeah.
Like, that song to me. And he's like, you know, and they come and they play it. I was talking to Abby, his wife, who – I'm close to,
and darling
Amy, my co-host, is very close to. Like, they hang out outside of work.
She's a special girl. I had one day with her, but I feel like she's my best friend.
And she loves dogs. Yes. How do you not like somebody who loves a dog?
Right. Truly a kind heart.
And I remember Abby going, you know what? She told me, I don't think she'll care that I say this. She goes, the first time I heard it, I didn't really hear it.
I've heard that too.
She goes, I know. She goes, I was like, yeah, it's good. And I was like, oh man, Abby, that song. When you heard it come back produced, were you like, oh my God, it's even better. It's better than I thought it could be.
Well, what's amazing is the demo you know, Dan is really big on like, let's present a demo. This song was, we got the vocal and they didn't even add any harmonies. And I was like, guys, you're a harmony band. Like, are you sure you want to show the label without like the big sell? And he's like, we don't need anything. We're done. We need to give this to, you know, Scott, and see what happens next, you know? And he was right. Dan is a really special artist in terms of, he has such a balance of like, same thing, like commerce and art. Like,
and he's psychotic, which helps.
Psycho.
And it's, for me, I say that as someone who's also psycho, because we're both OCD, like crazy with lists and tasks. Mm-hmm. He is the most practical artist I think I've ever met.
I completely concur. And also to add a fun fact, he is the most inclusive, like songwriters, you could be best friends with the artist. You're writing the song. Oh my God, you're on the bus. Hugs, kisses, everything is joyful. You cannot hear from someone for a year. Like, it's a real thing. And even if your song's on the radio, it's like, see you at the number one party. Like, sometimes that happens. And I, not as much to me, I know this happens. Like, you think you're best friends with people and then they just split, you know? Because they're busy and it's perfectly understandable. But Dan makes time to be inclusive. Like, he'll call and say, guys, I really think this week we're going to hit top 20. But like, he's giving us little, like, inside scoops and stuff. And it's awesome. And it's so special, like, to be involved in a way that's kind of new to me. I mean, I've been in the business for this particular business for 11 years. And I've just never been so aware of what's going on with a song. But Dan, and both songs, Keeping Score, the other one that...
With Kelly Clarkson on the record, yeah.
The two, like, he'll give me little updates. So this, even when that was happening, you're not going to believe it, guys, but Kelly Clarkson's going to, you know. I mean, that was huge. I've never had anything like that happen. And I would have found out, typically, I'd find out from my publisher and it'd be like, oh, and then I'd be thanking them. But he, like, he brings you into the fold. It's really sweet.
The cool thing about Dan from Dan and Shay is, and we talk so inside here, it's Dan from Dan and Shay.
I know. I'm sorry.
Is that he's so good also at knowing, and I mean this in the most complimentary way, at knowing his role too. Because he's like, Shay's the singer.
I know.
Like, Shay's the front
man. He's a businessman.
He's like, well, this is,
oh, yeah.
Like, I do this and Shay does this and we're great together, but I'm not trying to be the front man.
I think they are so lucky to have found each other.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in both directions equally.
And they had tried different things that didn't work.
Uh-huh.
But it was like that perfect. But and listen, Shay's not tracking. Shay's not doing any of that crap. Shay wants to sleep and sing. And he's the best. He's the best.
He is the best.
And Dan is like, you sleep all day. I'll handle this.
Uh-huh.
And when it's showtime, you do show.
Yeah.
It's great. They're a great team.
Yeah.
I love them. Oh, by the way, here's Keeping Score. It's Dan and Shay and Kelly Clarkson. Did you write this as a duet?
Mm-mm. No.
So it wasn't, we're going to write this and go search for someone?
No.
That's even cooler than if all of a sudden a big artist comes in.
It's the best. That song is like a lifer moment, for Dan and for me. He had that title, and he really was feeling those feelings. Oh, my phone. Let's turn it off.
Find somebody cool. tell us if it's somebody cool. Yeah, tell us
if it's somebody
cool.
I wonder if it's Ryan. It's not. Not at all. It's the lamest person in my, like, it's not a person. It's like a text.
It's a bot?
It's like one of those, yeah.
It's a Walgreens bot? It's
letting me know. Yeah.
The exactly. Walgreens, your prescription needs to be filled. That's what I get sometimes.
I'm so cool. Yeah.
I knew it wasn't Ryan. He's doing an Ask Anything Twitter chat now, and he just answered one of my questions.
No way.
I was like, how do your arms get so big? And he did a video back. He's like, Bobby in Nashville asked how my arms get so big.
Oh, my God. Let's circle back to abs and Ryan in a little bit, because
okay.
That is a good story.
Because I talk to him all the time about his body.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
I make fun of him all the time.
I make fun of him because I want it. It's one of those where it's like, I'm going to make fun of you because I don't have it, and I wish I did. But just on the Dan and Shay, just one final comment about this. Like, from Speechless, you're going to be so rich. Isn't that so cool? I mean, really. It's not even, you're not even getting paid for that song yet, I would imagine. Has the check started?
No, it'll be 3 months or 3 quarters before. Yeah.
And then it'll trickle a bit, but you're going to be so rich from that. That's going to be so cool, man. And you know what? You deserve every freaking penny of it.
Thank you.
How many people wrote that song?
Four.
You, who else?
Dan Shea and Jordan Reynolds. Who is a hoot? I don't know if you know him,
Jordan
but he
Reynolds
is adorable.
From Brandon Ray? I think he's worked with Brandon Ray on Producers
Maybe?
And stuff.
I don't know. I only know him as a goofball friend of mine that I write songs with. I don't know who else he works with. I know he works with Dan Shea a lot, though.
Mike, who was in here recently after Ryan that was telling us to bring her in?
The hell?
Somebody was here recently.
Wow.
Do you know Joy Williams?
No.
Somebody was here the last couple. Because a couple people have been like, hey. And I was like,
I feel like,
I know.
That makes me feel really special. That's cool.
You know what's cool? I was reading about. So I know the music part of what you've done because. Mm-hmm. One, I'm a fan of just writing. Like, I'm a writer. I write songs. Like
I love that you care so much. It means so much to all of us.
Like, I enjoy the art of writing and creating, right? And so that's why I started doing this because I'm like, I just think it's cool.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the thing gets downloaded like hundreds of thousands of times, right? And so I never did it for that. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I love it. And so I started doing the studying the writing part of it. But so I'm looking up and I know all of your songs. But then I look into you and I start to see like your music history.
Oh God!
Because you were actually a singer in a family band,
yes,
which I think is so freaking cool. Because you talk about a relationship.
Yeah.
That's like 9 of them happening at once in a family band. You can't even just leave that one.
No. Well, you do.
Well, you do. But when you do, you're done. Like you have to leave. But it's not like you can just take. Yeah. That's your family.
Yeah.
And even then, you can't really leave.
Well.
Like, they're still your family.
Yeah.
Kind of?
No.
No? Tell me about that. So how old are you?
My family's, speaking of counterculture, I was raised very unusually, that's right. And it's a very long story, but it's like...
Raised in New York?
No, I was born in New York. A month later, we moved to Florida, and then... A year later, we moved to Alabama, and then a year later, and I, as a child, I was like, oh, we move a lot, but really, my parents are kind of like, what's the word? Gypsy kind of people.
Okay.
And we lived in other people's houses a lot, and it was like financially very, very tumultuous, and we would do creative things, you know, for my dad's art a lot as a kid.
Is that why you were gypsies for art?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's religion is another component, but whatever. It's mainly that. My dad was creative, and he wanted to be creative, and we were kind of like, oh, well, you guys can. It was a strange, strange upbringing. And the band was really like the last, you know, version of that. So we were like, you know, there was another financial, like, oh, God. And it was like, let's start a band. And just so happens... We were really good. Like, my sister is an incredibly gifted singer and songwriter. She has a song on the charts right now. She's a songwriter as well. My brother was very gifted at playing guitar. My parents are actually extremely gifted musically. And we were signed to Atlantic Records. I mean, it was this whole thing. But really, it's like the up-down habit is just, it's really hard to shake. And that was the band, you know. It was... pretty tumultuous. So I don't look back on it like, oh, what a wonderful, fun thing I got to do. It was more like obligatory. And I'm really happy that I was like through a lot of therapy. I figured out what was going on there. Like it was a lot of weird stuff. But
how old were you that it was obligatory?
That's what makes it weird is like we were so secluded. We didn't have a community. That's part of why I'm so grateful for Nashville. We moved around a lot. Our family was all we had. So at 18 years old, I wanted to go to college, and there was a financial problem, and it was like, let's work for the family, and it lasted 10 years. So like 18 to 28.
Wow, you were in the band for 10 years.
Yeah.
And you'd never loved it.
No.
And you were the front?
Me and my sister shared the lead, but yes, I wrote a lot of the songs, I played a bunch of the instruments, and I was managing the band. I was doing everything, and it was really just trying to keep my parents' lights on, to be honest with you. Like I was just trying to save the family.
How do you get out of that?
It's very weird and complicated, but step one was my sister, God bless her, had the bravery to be like, I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore. She just wanted to do a solo career, and I was kind of like, me too. Like, I was so afraid to hurt the family, but she was brave enough to get out of there, and then I got out of there, and we both moved. Well, no. I moved to Nashville, and then she eventually moved to Nashville, and That's how I got out. I just said, I'm done.
You know? Didn't want to sing anymore?
I feel like singing is something I get to do all day long for me. All day long. I have a show later. I'm doing a little gig later, like a corporate gig, just singing three songs and I'm out of there. I get to sing all the time and I love singing. I love it. It's so much fun. But selling singing is like, I'm done. I don't want to sell anything. I just want to make stuff. Do you know what I mean?
So when you came to town, then did you just want to write songs?
Just write songs.
That was the goal.
The goal. And I have no other goals to this day. I don't want to publish anybody. I don't want to manage anybody. I don't want to work for a label. I literally just love this. I fucking love writing songs. Like, I am just as excited about what I wrote today as this speechless. I'm just as excited. Like, that's really what gets me going, is just making something make sense. And it's like complicated emotions and putting it into simplistic wording. Like, that to me is like everything.
Do you think that your not so awesome experience singing in the family band, though, has made this happen now where you don't want to sing because of that?
I think there's a portion of it there. And I feel like that's sort of a therapy conversation that I will work through at some point with my amazing therapist, Laura Lee. She's like my safe place. You know,
if you're shouting at your therapist, you love them. I've done that many times,
Laura
too. If you're
Lee,
shouting out my
I
name.
I love you, girl. Like, I'm so grateful. She's really helped me through like kind of really putting a lot of this in its place. Like, it's a very complicated and unusual life. Have you ever read The Glass Castle?
I have not.
I haven't either. She told me, like, don't read it, but that's your life. Like, it's a really weird upbringing where there's no safety or security, and you're just kind of hoping everything. I mean, that's no way to raise children. And I have three children now, and like, I'm, you know, aware of what happened a little more, you know, but that could go on and on.
It feels like pop music was your counterculture.
It is.
You talk about you love pop music.
You've just nailed it.
You weren't supposed to love pop music.
That's exactly right. And you fucking nailed it, because when we were signed, I wanted to play by the rules. And it was like, we're too cool for that. We're too cool for that. And I was just like, but it's good. And I don't understand. Like, I was so confused.
And you weren't supposed to like it.
Exactly.
And what do you do when you're young? Everything you're not supposed
exactly.
to like, you're drawn
you
to.
You just gave me something new to chew on. Truly. That is the truth. I love rules. That's really what it is. My family was allergic to rules. Like, no, thank you. I don't want to be a part of that thing. And so there's a little bit of counterculture like in my blood, but you're absolutely right. Music was like the thing. I love bumper bowling. I know how to hit the pins. Like, you know what
Inside
I mean?
Inside the lanes, you are amazing. And you love
that's
lanes.
Just my I love lanes.
Yeah, I do too. And
I love
I love to create lanes and stay in them.
Yeah.
I didn't have any rules ever. I grew up, you know, bad. I wasn't a family band, but
I don't
grew
know
up
anything about your childhood. If there is like public knowledge, fill me in. I don't know anything.
Oh, I don't know about public knowledge.
Okay.
But I grew up. My mom was a drug addict. She died in her 40s. I don't know my dad.
Okay.
So it was like 10. I was kind of raising myself.
We're officially in the same like weird column. I got it. Okay.
Yeah. And I never had rules ever, which is, it seems great. But
kids like rules.
Yeah. I think structure,
boundaries,
at least some structure. To be taught structure is a thing.
Yes.
Maybe you don't love it. Maybe I didn't want, but I was never taught it.
Yes.
That being said, I think there is a beauty now to, I don't ask about a lot of rules. Mm-hmm. I just go and do things.
Right.
And then if I need to learn the rules later, I do. But I think you're able to go into so many undiscovered places where it seems like, wow, this person's a real trailblazer.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm not trailblazing anything.
Yeah.
I'm just doing what I feel instead of doing
yes.
what I've been taught. And so, yeah, for me it was, I had to kind of grow up real quick.
I think that's a fair, everyone says, you know, I don't know if you've seen everyone's seen It's a Wonderful Life, but you know when he's like, you were born older, George. It's like, I feel like people that are in situations like that just are born older, lucky for them, or they have to grow up really fast. And I don't know, I'm glad to hear that about you. It's neat to connect about that. Luke Dick is someone also really weird, like everyone with like weird stuff. I'm like, oh, you know, Jessie Jo Dillon is another one you might want to talk to someday. She's amazing. And I find these like weird people, you know, Dan, weird people. Everybody's like funky stories, and that's what makes me feel cozy. But then, like you said, I think it serves you. You know what I mean? Having like shitty situations as a kid, I wouldn't undo it. Like,
yeah,
if I could
either.
Go back, I wouldn't undo a thing, because I feel like I'm calmer than this doesn't seem like that big of a, a deal. Like, I'm very like, I'm just having fun. I'm having fun, you know? But I think that's what I have to be grateful for. It's like, thank you for setting the shit bar so high that I hardly ever, like, I don't even see it anymore. My life is like really easy. And I'm like, God, yes. You know,
do you, I'll not project onto you. I'll tell you me, and then I'll okay. ask you the question because, you know, in your childhood, you're wired mm-hmm. pretty hard, and it's hard mm-hmm. to shake that. And you're that's right. why I've been through a lot of therapy. It's because yes. I know a lot of things mm-hmm. because I was taught a lot of things early mm-hmm. and not the right things.
Yeah.
So you're trying to unlearn things. Mm-hmm. And for me, vulnerability stuff, because I had to like be right. I was the only one there for me.
Right.
Put the shell up, never let it in. Right.
Right.
And so, you know, I still struggle with that now.
I do too.
I'm 38 years old.
So am I. When's your birthday?
You? In April.
I'm 2 months older than you.
We're basically the same.
Amazing.
And so it's like, you know, I've never been married. Uh-huh. I've never been engaged. And it's all of that's because of, you know, how I grew up.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to undo it. Like, I'm trying to unwind that ball.
It's really hard, but it's like worth the work. Do you do EMDR at all?
I did for a while. Yes, absolutely. It was awesome. Yes. You have to. So for those that don't know, and your EMDR may be different than what mine was.
Okay, I don't know what yours was.
So I would sit with my therapist mm-hmm. and she had the computer up.
Okay.
And did she put things on you? Did your
ears?
Yeah. Okay, that's what it is. Yeah. We did the ears, and it's like, and then you talk through
yes.
scenario, and you look and see things,
yes.
and things just like come
yeah.
out of you.
Uh huh. Whoops-a-daisy.
Yeah. So
oh, yeah.
I did EMDR for a while.
Yeah.
You've done it?
I've done it, and I'm so glad I did. I got to a point with my therapist where there's so many amazing things you said. I don't want to forget them. That your thing is like, walls up, da 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 da. Like mine is abandonment. Like when my husband, I have the most amazing husband. I am so lucky. I can't believe I found him, his family, blah blah blah. If he leaves town, he's in my head. He's dead. Mm. Like he's sleeping with somebody else. Like I have these weird, like I need to protect myself. I get real scared that he's abandoned me, and I'm saying that full frontal because I'm sure a lot of people struggle with this. And you know, it's a thing. But my therapist was like, we need to get to that. And she couldn't quite get to it. Like he would leave town and I would just crumble again. And even when it's out loud, you're still kind of like, God, I'm still doing it. And it still hurts. It's like, it's one thing to be like, I'm doing that thing that I do and it doesn't hurt, you know? And she was like, I think you should do some EMDR. And mine was this amazing woman in Green Hills. And she would put like headphones on and there'd be this noise that would go back and forth. Dee, 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 like
almost
that.
Like a hearing test.
Yes. Like a hearing yeah. test. And I told her some like really awful dark memories I have from my childhood. And she would walk my adult self back to those places and save me from that situation. And it basically just is a quick processing thing. It's not magic. It's literally like forcing your brain to process something to the end rather than having it like an open book. It's like a unfinished business or something like that. And man, it helps so much.
Yeah, it helped me too.
I mean, it really helped me kind of go like, that's over. It's over. You're not that little girl anymore. You're not scared. You're fine. You're like, have a safe place to be, you know? And I therapists, financial advisors, really good publisher. I feel like I have family in those people. And then I have my husband's family who rule and all these friends we keep talking about. I just feel like I'm more than made up for lost time in terms of community, for sure.
What I find refreshing about this conversation and what I've been able to see too is when I wrote my first book, I was nervous that people were going to feel sorry for me.
Yes.
I didn't want that.
Yeah.
And I would go and I do stand up. So I do theaters all around the country mm-hmm. and I go and I meet pretty much everybody before or after the show.
Mm-hmm.
And or I would do the book tour. I would go on book tour.
Yeah.
And I would be nervous because I didn't want people feeling bad. I never want people feeling bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because I also don't like people feeling happy for me because you can't really have one.
Yeah.
You know, there's always this meter of where you are. You can't just be super happy without having super sad.
Yeah.
And so I struggle with any emotion at all, right? And so I was like, man, I don't want people to feel bad for me. But I wrote these stories. And what I learned was, with one story in particular, I was nervous writing my first book. Because before my mom died, she was struggling hard with meth and alcohol and all the hard stuff.
Yeah.
But she was an addict, which is why I've never had a drink of alcohol or done that because I know I can't.
Wow.
I would love to, but I know I would just, I'd be the champion of it.
Wow.
And I'm super competitive.
Yeah.
And I would win the alcohol contest for sure. But I remember I wrote a story in my first book, and it was about my mom. She was in bad shape financially, and she did porn. And she called me and was like, I'm going to put this out if you don't give me money.
Oh, my God.
And I wrote this story in my book, and I was like, I don't know if anybody's going to understand this or feel bad. And do you know? And that was the thing I worried about the most. But so many people came up to me, and they were like, you have no idea how much I empathized with that situation.
Yes.
Maybe not that exact thing, but that situation where people... And I kind of went, you know what? I think we're all just messed up in our own way.
All of us.
And if we're all messed up, is it even really messed up?
No.
That's what it came down to for me. Like, we're not even, we feel we're messed up because nobody talks about it.
Yes.
But when people start talking about it, you go, oh, we're the same. And so if we're all the same, that's not messed up.
This is why I write songs, because I feel like there, most of people on this planet are walking around feeling a ton of things and just not, they're not linguistically structured to put words to things. When you hear a song, you know, this is a random example. I'm sorry I'm circling back, but this is exactly why I write songs. Just Another Day in Paradise. What's his name?
Just Another Day in Paradise. Okay. Yeah.
Think about that song. It's like kids screaming, phone ringing, dog barking, the mailman bringing the stack of bills. I love this song. It's amazing. It is literally the picture of a normal American life. I had no idea at 18 years old. I didn't have the gifting to put together why I was so obsessed with this song. But I now know, like, I was setting a picture for what I wanted despite everything that was going on around me. I just wanted to be under a roof in a safe place with some kids and a dog, and it being okay that the biggest problem was that, you know, the pizza guy didn't deliver the restaurant didn't take the reservation. Like, I had no idea at 18, I think it was around, where I was like, why does this song make me cry? Every time I hear it, I want to cry. That writer, Craig Wiseman, I texted him about this after I had my babies. I was like, you set a whole standard for what I wanted to live, and I had no idea. And here I am. I got my two babies. I have twin babies, and I had my babies, and they were a month old, and I'm texting him and going like, You kind of made this happen by writing this song. Like, you gave me something to strive for that didn't resemble my life at all. And this is precisely why I write songs. I love the idea that if I write about a man, it's going to be a good man. If I write about a woman, it's going to be a strong woman. If I write about love, it's either going to be, you know, amazing and worth it and the one, or I'm going to write about making mistakes and owning them. Rich is a good example of that. Like, it's a silly song. It's funny and makes me giggle. But it's also, she's not blaming this guy. She's blaming herself. Like, I want to make people feel like they have something to strive for, even if they don't know, you know, at a young age, whether... Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
I'm kind of talking around
things. No, you're talking right into it, and I understand what you're saying, because you are doing... And hopefully I'm not cutting the shortcut too quickly.
No, bring
but what on. You're doing is what you had done for you. I mean, you...
Tell me. What do you mean?
Well, you like that he set that standard for you with a song.
Yes. Uh-huh.
For what you wanted. I'm not a therapist. I've been a lot of
it
therapy.
It feels like that,
but,
though.
But as you say, you know, he set that song for you. And who sang that? Phil?
Phil Vassar.
Phil Vassar, yeah. So Phil Vassar singing that song.
Uh-huh. He doesn't have kids, by the way. Amazing. But go on.
And you're hearing it going... That's what I want.
Yes.
So when you're writing these songs, it sounds like you're writing the types of songs that made you feel
absolutely
like you were secure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That, every time. Every time, every day. Every movie I ever saw that made me feel something like The Goosey is about love. Like, those are noted. I know they're in there, and they're part of why I found the love of my life. It's because I was like, this is what love is. This is what I want. It's like you keep putting it in a little basket or something.
You're writing for others what you needed.
Yes. And what I hope people will feel good hearing is possible. I don't know. Art is so powerful. I mean, art makes us do really weird shit and makes us move to Guam to pursue, you know, whatever. We just do weird stuff because we're inspired by something artistic. And I'm talking way a whole lot about
but
this is why I write songs, for sure.
Let me throw this commercial real quick.
By now, you may be racking your brain. Valentine's Day. What are you going to get her? 1-800-Flowers.com. I'll say it right now because it is not complicated. Roses from 1-800-Flowers are a no-brainer. Right now, when you order early, 1-800-Flowers has amazing deals. on vibrant and romantic Valentine's rose bouquets, arrangements, and so much more, starting at $29.99. There are so many unbelievable deals from 1-800-Flowers, but you have to hurry. Gorgeous Valentine's bouquets, all the arrangements, starting at $29.99. It's an amazing deal, but it will not last long. I'm telling you, so many of the listeners, so many of my people have done this. They love it. To order Valentine's bouquets, arrangements, and more starting at $29.99, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, click the radio icon, enter the code BBS. The code is BBS. You're listening right now. Maybe you don't have it yet. That's why I'm here. 1-800-Flowers.com, click the radio icon, and enter the code BBS, as in Bobby Bone Show, BBS. I love that Dollar Shave Club has everything that I need to look, feel, and smell my best. And what I love even more is the fact that I never have to go to a store. That's because, well, one, Dollar Shave Club delivers everything that I need right to my door. And two, they keep me fully stocked on what I use so I don't run out. It works like this. They got it all. No matter what you're getting ready for, head to toe. Your hair, your skin, your face, you name it, Dollar Shave Club has it. That's what I love about it, too, because I have it set up that the toothpaste is sent to me. The Dollar Shave Club toothpaste, it's sent every 3 months, comes to my door because for some reason I always forget to go buy a toothpaste. And it's also great toothpaste as well. They have a handsome discount. The more you buy, the more you save. Right now, they have a bunch of starter sets you can try for just $5, like their oral care kit. After that, the restock box ships regular size products at a regular price. Boom. I don't know what you're waiting for, because you can get your starter set right now for $5. DollarShaveClub.com/bones. DollarShaveClub.com/bones. I love it. DollarShaveClub.com/bones.
Okay. Let's run through a few more songs.
Sure.
I have all of them here. Let's see. Let's do some Maren stuff.
Ooh, yay.
This is, let's do I Could Use a Love Song. Here's
I Could Use a Love Song.
Now, the odd thing about this song is that it was Marin's first number one.
I know. Amazing.
You know, and congratulations to you.
Thank you.
She should have had a couple before it.
I agree. I totally agree.
But that's her first number one. That had to be cool for you guys.
It was really special.
Because she finally did it, and you are on that team that finally did it.
I completely concur. It was a really magical thing to be a part of. And Jimmy and I, who wrote that with her, we have a bunch of songs coming out on her next project. We have a very incredible writing relationship and friendship. It's a great team of people. Maren is a magic little creature. I just adore her.
Here, a little creature, that's funny. Here is Rich.
Boy, I'd be rich if the tow Prada Benz in the driveway.
It got to number two.
Two, I know.
How funny is that?
It was really funny. I had I Could Use a Love Song in January, and I knew Speechless was going to go. This was between. And if it had gone number one.
You'd have got the triple play.
And yeah. I would have been the first woman to do that, a new woman to do that in a really long time. And
one
I was like,
spot.
God damn it.
You know, and the funny thing was, I remember the just the inside stories about the things that you don't get to hear as a songwriter, which are weird for me to hear now as someone who is, you know, I'm on like 150 radio stations, and I try not to be the programming guy because I don't want to get in those battles. Because what's happening with the programmers is it's a penis measuring contest between the people that are running the streaming service and satellite, and they hate each other, and it's a whole – I'm not trying to be in that, right?
Right.
But I love music because I also create things, so for a different reason.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing these conversations about Rich, and people are like, it's not country. Ooh, I know. And stations were pulling out of it.
I know.
And it was so frustrating because I'm also friends with Maren. And I'm in too deep in all the ways. And I just remember being so frustrated that it got to two.
I know. It was still thrilling. I mean, it was on the chart long enough where you're not going to look back in 5 years and go like, it was a number two. I mean, people know the song. It was also a fourth single. Those are interesting things. Those are interesting sells. Like, she's on her next, she's in the next space, you know? I mean, they were going to pull it at 30, pull it at 20, pull it at 10.
Oh, they were going to pull it the whole time because I was seeing all the complaints.
Oh.
And here's what saves songs in the end. So just to, because I'm just not a radio guy.
Yeah.
Like, I just like to communicate, right? Mm-hmm. If it's on a stage with a microphone or if it's a book, or I have a great platform on radio, but I don't consider myself a radio, you know, that kind of guy. But the whole time that song is, people are like, I don't think it's, you know, Prada, all these things. Like, it's not country. But what saved it was the fact that it researched. And they would do these, they'd get the data back, and it'd be fantastic. Yeah. And it's like, what do you want to believe? Your fake hillbilly penis. You're like, you're trying to be fake country.
Yeah.
Stop fighting for something, against something. And you're fighting against some other dude. Mm-hmm. It's just, it gets ugly.
The reason why I feel like I don't care is that that song has all the structure of a perfect country song. We may have put Prada in there, and yeah, it's groovy as fuck, but like, it is a song based on the blueprint of how a country song is written. And the fact that not everyone is going to hear that is totally fine. I am not from here. I'm not from around here. Like, I'm from New York. Mostly from New York. Other parts of the country, I didn't live in the South long enough to even understand what goes on down here. You know, I moved here in 2008, so I'm a newbie. I totally get it. So I'm not going to argue with putting Prada in a song, but
it
needs to be said that is so blueprinted perfectly.
You know, I have the strength and the weakness the same. So I came from pop and hip hop before I came to country.
Okay.
So I built my syndicate. I was doing pop music, hip hop. I built my own syndication company in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Now I grew up in Arkansas, so I was a huge.
You did?
I did.
My husband's from Arkansas.
Really?
What part of Arkansas?
Central. I'm a town nobody knows. Like 700 people.
What is it called?
Well, it's called Mountain Pine, but it's near Hot Springs, which is near Little Rock.
Okay.
Which is everything in Arkansas is close to each
He's
other.
He's from Nimrod, Arkansas.
I know Nimrod. I know Lake Nimrod. Yeah, we used to go on Lake Nimrod all the time. Yeah. How would I know there's Lake Nimrod?
No one knows Nimrod.
We still fish in Lake Nimrod all the time.
Amazing. Oh, that's so cool.
It's funny that I even know that lake.
I know. Well, Nimrod, it's like a joke I get to tell at parties. Like, oh, my husband's from Nimrod.
I know where that is.
Yeah.
In Arkansas, I played so much ball around the state that you kind of know everything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I had a country background, but I went to pop and hip hop. I did the national sports show. I did a national rock show. I just love music, but I was always the same, right? I'm the same person on all formats. And so, but when I came over to country full time, I didn't know the rules.
Yes.
Back to what I was saying, but that's what has made me successful is that, and I was hated. I was hated so much. I was hated. And you know what? I still am a little bit. And I'm a really good guy too, but I'm still hated because I do things different. And, but I think that, and what you brought in, what I was able to bring in was what real people feel. Not what real people are supposed to feel. And there's a difference. There's a difference in being taught what you're supposed to feel and you don't feel it anyway and what you really do feel.
There are universal, real things that are reoccurring. There's nothing new under the sun. It's all the same, like a couple of topics, you know? Yeah.
Crazy. When that record came out, right when it came out, we played Rich and we switched around. We reversed the expletive. And it. And I remember Maren texting me going, that's funny.
What does it say, Tish?
No, it was way before it was even put out. It was when my church was still doing its deal. And I was playing it a bit. It was just like, because I didn't use anything cool system. I just reversed it.
Amazing.
And then you wrote Sugar.
Yes.
And all these Maren songs feel like singles because the record did so well. Because I listened to the record so many times. Here's that. Baby, would you be my sugar, make my I'm not full of crap. I know all the songs.
That's amazing. That's the first one we wrote together.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a good one. You still like listening back to this stuff?
Yes.
You do?
Not all the songs I've ever written. Some of them I'm terrified to listen to, but that record still stands out. My kids still like to listen to it.
Do you have any hits that you're like, I like that one still.
What's funny is they become something new. I haven't had any like singles that I thought were awful. Like sometimes you just hide under and just hope that the song doesn't get cut. There's one.
You don't have to say what it is.
I won't. It has never been cut. But I swear there's this time where I'm like, that's the one. It's going to ruin my career. Like it's going to get cut and it's going to make me feel so embarrassed. But like, no. But they become something new. Like Lonely Eyes is a song I liked. Oh, there it is. Look at that. I always loved the song as a piece of art, but playing it made it different. Like, I play it differently on my, you know, on my little writer's round shows, and I was like, wow, I hear this a little bit differently, you know? And the lyric jumps out a little bit more after the fact, which is bizarre. I mean, I was there. We all wrote, you know, it's weird how music just pops out differently at different times.
Your first number one was Drunk Last Night.
Yes.
Eli Young Band.
This is so weird listening to all these in a row.
All together. It's like it's your life.
Here it is.
Here it is. Here's an audio version.
Am I about to get buried?
Yeah. So at this point, leading up the day before you wrote this song.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even when you wrote the song, you don't know for a while.
Mm-mm.
So, because you write it and then it kind of exists, and then there's this person may cut it, or this person's going to cut it, and you go, are they really? Mm-hmm. Then they do, and you wonder, is it a single?
Yeah.
And then, so we'll just act like that's the line the day before you cut this. Like, where were you before you had this number one song?
Where was I?
Like, not even like literally,
career in your
mind as a songwriter.
Okay. Again, very lucky. My life was so shitty before that every step of this has been kind of fun for me. Like, I bartended for 4 years, then I got a deal. I was signed to BJ Hill at Warner Chappell. And
publishing,
like,
writing.
Yes. Yeah. It was like 3 or 4 years in. So that's kind of hauling ass. That's moving. You know, getting a deal that early is kind of unusual. So I was like pinching myself. Oh my God, I can stop. I can quit bartending. This is going to be great. And I was just, nose was down. Like, I was just excited to show up. And I had had a few cuts. There's like a Jana Kramer cut I had. And then this band, Eden's Edge, is really why I moved here. My sister-in-law, I ended up marrying her brother. But Hannah Blaylock from Eden's Edge is my sister-in-law. And I moved here because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And she didn't kind of know what she was doing. And it was like, let's write songs. Like, it was really quite organic. But this was a couple of years into my deal. So I don't think I really... I don't think I was paying that close attention to what was happening, like, cuts-wise. It's weird. When you get into it and you have, like, hundreds of copyrights, they get cut quite often. But when you're starting out, it's like you kind of have, like, two good songs. You know? They're not that good yet. I don't know. I don't think I really thought what I was doing... You know what? I think I did think what I was doing was good, but it is funny looking back because that was definitely the first one that was just like, well, there you go. And I remember playing it for my publisher and just going like, if we can't get this to get cut, like, I officially don't have a nose for this. Like, this song feels like a hit. And Allison Jones was in the other room and she popped in. She was like, can I put this on hold for Eli Young Band? So it was fast, but my nose was down. I mean, to answer your question, I just feel like I was really focused on trying to just build a catalog and do a good job and show up and not be nervous anymore. Stuff like that.
That's a thing too. You go into rights with writers that you really respect. And the more you do it, the harder it is to get into rooms.
Oh man.
And then when you do, it's almost like, if I don't do a good job, they're not going to have me back.
That's exactly right. Tom Shapiro was the one where I was like, I had to calm myself down. Like, I had to like I was definitely like super nervous. I hope he doesn't know that to this day, but I was so nervous and I went in there and he was just a darling and I calmed down, you know, but it was that was where my head was. I was just trying to be like good at this, you know.
Did you play that I'm good card? Like, I know I'm good, not in a bad way, or did you come off as? Because for me, if I get on other like comedians, I'm like, oh my God, I need to act like I don't care, but I really care, and I want them to think. You just try to fit in with people that you think are awesome.
Oh God, I don't know if I was like swinging a dick or anything. I feel like I was just, you know, grateful to be there, you know, and really like when you have nothing going on, you're kind of like, why am I here? Like, who, you know, what did someone have to do to get me in here at that point? You know, but then you kind of gathers some moss over time. People are like, oh, I heard a lot about you. So-and-so, I write with so-and-so. And Bob DePiro was one, like he had heard, you know, she's pretty good. I should write with her. And it was like, that starts happening and you're like, oh, okay. I've got a little rep going, you know? I mean, it's bizarre. It's such a small town. And even if someone's screaming your name, like you're the most amazing thing that's ever happened, they will forget about that in a month. So it does genuinely take like 10 years to like have a name that isn't just flavor of the day, you know?
Cause there are so many flavors of the day, and it's hard, even with artists for me, like somebody gets a hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I know it's cool to have a hit, but okay, show me a second or a third one, because there are so many artists that have one hit.
Yes, there are.
And when you get one hit and you get really cocky and arrogant, it's like, you have no idea, man. Like, this town eats people up like you all the time.
Yeah.
One hit?
Yeah.
Give me two.
That's funny. There's a couple of writers I remember writing with who had just a little bit going on, and all of a sudden they were like Mr. Teacher Town, you know, going like, you don't want to do that. Let me tell you what. And I remember going like, take notes. Never do this. Mm. I don't care how fucking big you get. No matter how many songs you have, don't treat people like they don't know what they're doing, because they're bringing a component. That's what co-writing is. They're bringing a component that you cannot provide. There is a reason why they're there. And if there isn't a reason, then don't fucking write with them. But like, if there is anything to give here, like, don't condescend, you know. And everyone's at different places. I remember the first time I wrote with, it wasn't the first time, it was a couple times, Mark D. Sanders, I got to write with him. And he did this thing with this terrible idea I had. I can't believe he even wrote with me. My idea was awful. It was like, I think the word like Hallmark card and Walmart were rhyming. Like, it was so embarrassing, like in retrospect, but I was like, I know. Da, da, da. And he did this trick that I do all the time now, where sequentially he circled back to the first verse conceptually. So it's like, we went through the song, you're in the story, it's moving along, and then all of a sudden you are physically back where it began. And I was like, how did you do that? And I meant it. I was like, what did you just do? And he was like, well, that's why they pay me the big bucks. Like, he's so adorable. He's a good friend of mine. But he was really sweet and kind, yeah, about my lack of knowledge about that. It's a trick everybody uses. I just hadn't seen it before. And I think about that all the time when I'm writing with someone who's a little more new here or a little green. Your tricks are mind-boggling at this point. You're helping them learn these little things that, and condescending, being condescending about that can just, it shuts me down. I don't do like mean. I just don't. You know, I don't like mean.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833.
It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
The thing about that, too, is that because douchey people really irritate me when it comes to learning, doing something new, working. But people took chances on me. And taught me and sat with me and showed me things. And how am I not going to repay that? Like, that's how, because if it weren't for people, like you say, doing what he did with you, I wouldn't be here for in a lot of ways.
Definitely not. Definitely not. And the fact that this is, I mean, there are different businesses, art businesses, where you're, you know, your main thing is like in the next 5 years. Like, if you got to get it going in the next 5 years. That is not the case for this business. This is a lifelong thing. And it is very sobering and also awesome to remember that at the Hall of Fame dinner every year, I don't know any of those people. I don't know any, like, I don't, I only know a handful of the songs. That's going to be me in 40 years. Like, there's going to be a bunch of young people that have no idea. They might remember Speechless. Like, they might. But, like, it's going to be like, who is she? And if they're awesome enough to show up and watch my little presentation about how I had an awesome career and I made a lot of friends, like, then I won. You know what I mean?
Well, you'll be in your gold hovercraft for Speechless money. Flying in. Yeah, with your unicorn.
My pet unicorn.
That's going to be cool.
Amazing.
I'm going to write a couple other songs real quick. This is Weed, Whiskey, and Willie from Brothers Osborne. The only thing I believe in is weed, whiskey, and Willie. Dude, I love those guys.
God, they're the best. I've always said about them, and again, this is always, it always circles back to the fact that I had no community as a child, but when I think of someone I could call if someone broke into my house, those fucking boys would come beat the fucking shit out of someone for me, because they love so hard. They are so real. They're, again, give zero shits. I just love these people. I love people like them. They're amazing. And Lucy, that whole community is just magic.
Yeah, I tried as hard as I could to come here and not be close to anyone because I wanted to be objective. That's my thing. I'm going to be objective. I'm going to make no friends. Yeah. Screw the world. I want to have. I want my opinion to be pure. Uh-huh. But you meet people like John and TJ.
Oh.
And you go, well.
Just this once.
Like, then there have been a few. Dirks.
Oh.
Ryan.
Oh, you're naming all my faves. Like,
it's
truly.
It's like, why would I keep something out of my life that could actually make it a bit better?
Yes.
Like, I could call Dirks right now.
I agree. I feel
and
like.
And he'd answer his flip phone in a camper. And still he would. You know, but those guys, John had, I did this TV show, Dancing with the Stars, last.
You won, didn't you?
I won.
I don't watch TV, but someone was like, he won. And I was like, this is crazy.
It was crazy because I'm not good.
Congratulations.
Well, thanks. My point is, John and TJ's mom was a huge fan of that show.
No.
Huge fan. And also, she was a big fan of the radio show.
Uh-huh.
And because they would listen before she moved down here up in near D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was a big fan of both, right? And when she heard I was going on, it was like her two worlds were combining. And so John texted me. He's like, my mom's having her 70th birthday. This is like 3 weeks ago. I was doing Dancing with Us. I was on the stage in a full outfit about to walk out. And I get this text from John. He's like, I never told this story. He won't care. He's like, my mom's turning 70. Dude, can you make me a video? And because we're going to surprise her with this video. And I'm in full Dancing with Us, like total cowboy head, everything. And I was like, well, I'm about to go dance right now. Happy birthday. But I was so happy to do it because those guys, they're such good dudes. They're like normal humans who also play music.
I completely agree.
They play music well, wonderfully.
And they are uncorruptible, if that's a word. There is nothing this industry can do to them that would turn them into dicks. Like, there's nothing that can happen. Lots of people can turn into dicks. People turn into dicks and then they come back.
That happens a lot. I think that probably happened to me a little bit too.
It happens. Yeah. That's the thing. But like, they just don't corrupt. It's just not how they roll. How they roll.
Reba, Living Ain't Kill Me Yet.
Oh, God.
Why are you laughing that smile so big?
I'm laughing because me and Tommy Lee James, do you know Tommy Lee James?
I don't.
We wrote this song because she had a show, another, like, a series, you know, her, like, Reba shows. Mm-hmm. We wrote this as a kind of a Reba parody to be her theme song for this show. And then 3 years later, she cut it for her record, and it was just this full, like, that was an impression of Reba, and here we are. She actually cut it. It was such a good impression that she identified with it. It made us feel so good. Yeah. It was like, but it was so, it was like a mirror facing a mirror facing, you know what I mean? Like, it was a little Inception.
That's funny.
Know?
That's cool. It's also cool to have a Reba song.
Oh my God.
All other things aside, like, it's freaking Reba.
No, my bio always ends with, and Queen Reba. Like, yeah. She got a, like, you know, it is a thing. You're absolutely right. There's a few people. George Strait would be one if I ever, God, if that ever happened. Kenny is another one. If I ever, oh God, I would just die if I got a Kenny cut.
That's doable though.
I want it to happen so bad. We've had like a momentary hold. I've never connected a song of mine with him yet. I literally am like, it's a big goal. That would be huge. Because I just feel like he cuts timeless, but also relevant to the time, and they're always, the quality is always so good. And I mean, as recently as his last, it was amazing. It just goes so far back, and he's still cutting songs where you're like, God.
I felt with Kenny, he appreciates songwriters.
Mm. And he is one, which is a stunning combination. I mean, just to, he could cut only his own song, and he could.
And he doesn't.
And he doesn't.
And that's a big appreciation.
Yeah.
Because he could. And you know what? He could probably make a hit.
Oh, man.
Like, it's Kenny Chesney.
Exactly.
Like, if it's close, he wins because he deserves it at this point.
American Kids was the one where I was just like, shut the front door. What the fuck is happening right now? Like, how did you... That is such a timeless song. I've like, kissed the ground that song has walked on. I just think it's magic, and he made it magic. The production on it is perfect. And it's just... And his career goes back like 30 years. That's crazy.
Yeah, the Kenny and the McGraw stuff
is
wild to me, because there have been artists who have done 15 years and then it's not worked out and they're retired and they're considered legends.
Yeah.
These two are still contemporary.
It's insane.
To where they're not as considered as legendary with bigger careers because they're still going.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a weird thing because you would think they would be more loved. They are loved. You'd think they'd be more celebrated as legends because they are still going.
I know.
But a bit, and I was saying this about McGraw, because I remember being in ninth grade listening to Tim McGraw.
Mm-hmm.
Tim McGraw is just seen as one of the big country stars right now, superstar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If he had quit 10 years ago, and then come back, it'd have been like, the legend, Tim McGraw is back. We can't believe it. But because he's been so good and stayed relevant, he doesn't get that legendary credit yet. And that's nutty to me.
It's amazing. It reminds me of Steven Tyler. Mm. Like, vocally, I was always just like, how is it that this man still feels underrated? I'm so confused. Like, as a vocalist, how are you not getting, even though you're a monster star. It's like Aerosmith for life. It's crazy. They're like legendary, and yet I still feel like people are not listening to how brilliant his vocal is. Like, brilliant. But it's probably because of what you just said.
Yeah.
He never goes away.
He never went away, so you don't have time to really appreciate how amazing it was.
Yes.
Because we don't even, let's take a step out of music for a second. We don't really appreciate things as is until they're not around anymore.
Mm.
Just generally speaking.
Isn't that funny?
It sucks. It's a sucky thing about us. Because it's like we wish we knew when the good old times were happening.
Yes.
Because then we'd know that we're in the middle of the good old days.
Yeah.
But we don't until it's over. So I think that's a life thing.
Yeah.
But because Aerosmith never went away, you really don't. When he dies, we're going to go, oh my God.
Yeah.
How amazing was Steven Tyler?
Hole in My Soul. Do you remember that song?
I'm a big fan. I've only geeked out like three times ever.
Uh-huh.
And when he came into the show, I was like, this is crazy. This is like, as far as American rock stars
100.
Go.
Just epic. Ryan and I wrote with him.
Now, that'd be one where it would be like, holy crap.
We were so nervous.
And you just stare and you just look and you go, oh my God.
I didn't know what to do. Ryan and I both were just like, you're fucking Steven Tyler. How is this real? It was a bizarre day. But I remember, like, I didn't pee. I didn't eat. I was just, and he didn't eat or pee either. So I just felt like we were just listening to a story that never stopped for like 12 hours. And it never ended. It never ended. He has so many stories and he just went on and on. It was
amazing.
And
he doesn't mind sharing them.
All the deets, man.
And Steven's like 70 now, right?
I know.
But he doesn't act it.
Mm-mm.
He's still a bit Peter Pan.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I think you grow to where you have to grow. He hasn't had to grow in a lot of ways.
Amazing.
So much energy.
Ugh.
So nice.
So nice.
Doesn't have to be.
No. I mean, he was really gracious with two, like, little idiots. And honestly, neither of us had anything going on. He was probably like, why am I in here?
Like,
I mean,
He told a story. I was asking him about... Queen.
Because
I was like, to me, there are a couple artists that transcend time where if they started new right now, they would still be fantastic.
Oh God, I love you. I love that you said that. There are a few, and Queen is one.
Yeah, I think Biggie would be one because his style was so different. Dude. Then I think if he came out and he was new, you'd be like, oh, this new rapper is good. Because with time, you know, obviously, sonically, a lot of trends, things change. And I've often said that Biggie's style is more contemporary than Tupac's, even though Tupac was more culturally relevant at the time.
Interesting.
But I think if you took Biggie, and I've always said that about Queen, if you put them out right now, they're so different and so good. They would just be a cutting edge rock band right now, which is crazy. We weren't even born when they were great. But he was telling the story. I'll kind of wrap this up. He was telling the story about how Freddie Mercury was on the front of their bus. Mm-hmm. They were kind of a big deal, and Queen really wasn't. And Freddie Mercury was sleeping in the front of their tour bus. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm with a human.
Yeah.
And this is way before the movie and before the new generation was reintroduced to Queen. But he was so generous with his stories. Mm-hmm. And also, I think he liked telling them.
Yes. I think so, too.
Yeah, it was like a museum. It was like with the human rock museum.
Human museum. Amazing.
All right. We've done an hour here. I want to play one more thing. Do we have of her singing the background vocals on... Ooh. What Maren song did you sing back? Hold on. I have it written here. A Hero. Do we have that? I don't have... You sang background on Hero?
Yeah.
On the record, a bunch of stuff?
What did I sing on? I sang on Rich. Rich is my... Those are my backgrounds.
Really?
To a T is her... I'm trying to think of the one that was... We Do Us.
And I thought that was Maren. Yeah, I know. Everyone on my show. And I was like, you got Maren. He was like, no, that's not Maren. Yeah, he was like... Yeah.
That makes me excited.
Let's talk about Ryan's app. Let's come back to that real quick. You mentioned earlier... We want to come back to Ryan's body.
Oh, thank you for circling back. Go ahead. Okay.
It's like a songwriter trick I just taught you. You circle back. You
say that's right. You're just teaching me the ways. You're like taking notes. He, you know, when I met him, he's going to kill me a little bit. But when I met him, he was like doing IT work. He was kind of like kind of a nerd, still hot. I mean, he's a hot guy, but kind of like in this way where it's like he had no idea. No one was really paying much attention. It's just like, who's that secretly hot guy? And then I would dare him. I'm like, so when are you doing the record deal thing? Like who's offered this week? And I was joking with him because he's such a quiet and sort of private person. And I was just like, I'm never doing that ever. That's the worst. And he was like, oh, neither am I. And then I was like, so how many record deals did you get this week? You know, teasing him. And then he got the record deal and I was just like, of course, you know, it's like, it's a no brainer. Your voice is magic and you look like this and you know. And then we were at a party at he had this teeny weeny house. Did you ever go to his little teeny weeny house? Mm. He has this little house that he lived in before they moved into their house. And by the bathroom there was this bookshelf. And it was a party at his house, and Maren was there. Everyone was there. And I've been making fun of his abs because he started getting so strong and looking really good. And I'm in line at the bathroom, and there's this book that's like, you know, what was it called? Epic abs or something so dumb. And I had a friend, I was like, would you do me a favor? I'm like, would you just throw this book in front of Ryan on your way out? Like, and someone threw the book in front of him, and he knew that I was making fun of him. It's just so funny. And now we have this email exchange. He subscribes to Anarchy Abs. I don't know if you do.
No, I don't.
Maybe you should sign up. Yeah, it is so like it. Hilarious. The way they talk about like rock. I mean, it's so dumb and so funny. And every now and then he'll send me an ab thing, and then I'll send him an ab. It's always about abs. We're constantly talking about it.
I wear this chain. Do I have it on? I guess I took it off when he came up here. I don't. I always thought I'm not cool enough to wear a chain. He always wears chains. He's like, dude, you're cool enough. So I have a chain that I wear like 5 days a week because I'm like, dude, I'm just wearing it because you said it was cool.
Yeah.
Like I'm just trying to be cool, man. Amazing. Trying to be cool like you. No.
He really has no problem with the cool. He's all the cool.
I appreciate you coming by. I hope this was cool for you.
I'm so grateful that I got to do this, and I'm so happy to finally meet you. I feel like I've heard such amazing things. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this has been probably cooler for me than you. I have a really rich friend now that wrote Speechless. This is going to be great. I got three of them now. I've got all three except for the fourth one. I don't know. You say who wrote that? Jordan Reynolds?
Jordan Reynolds, yeah.
If I'm friends with... I got the whole
And
the whole
he produced
thing,
the record, so he's even rich. He's going to be monster rich. He's moving to Franklin any day now.
Look. Well, I appreciate you coming by.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been a great one. This is episode 156, and... thanks to our sponsors, and check out all these songs and more. And when Maren's record comes out, her new record, you got some on that, huh?
Yeah.
By the way, tonight, this will be put up in a couple days, but tonight I think that record goes up on pre-sale.
No way.
So tomorrow, actually.
Oh,
but
cool.
Yeah, at midnight tonight. So people will actually see all the tracks, all everything.
I got five on there.
Oh,
I'm
do
so
you
excited.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm so excited.
Are they already talking about singles, like 2 and 3 and 4 in? Are they mentioning things?
They chat, but I don't believe anything until it happens. Although Maren's really, she stays on track with her plan. She has a plan, you know. But one of the songs is coming out as like one of those rollout songs on the 22nd.
Like one of the Instant Grat songs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, well, that'll wrap it up. Thanks, Mike Deep. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.